Season 4, Episode 2 of the Decoded Podcast. I'm Roland Chidiak. He's Chris Clough.
Was anyone knocking at the door saying, hey, boys, where are you? Damn, nope. Look at that. We've been chatting. We did an on-ramp because I was tight today. I got to the link quick.
You did.
When you sent it to me. So, like, we've been talking since 8:35, 8:40?
Yeah, and it's 9:42.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. It just means the podcast doesn't go as long, but we got to chat. And I feel like I haven't talked to you in a really long time. This week has been quite the week. You know what I'm loving right now? And I'm gonna bring your visual up for the people who are watching. The steam coming from your drink is like this really cool effect.
It's actually this.
Oh, it's one of those things. Here I am thinking, wow, his coffee.
Well, watch what happens. I don't know if you can pick it up. Can you see it changing color?
No.
Oh, really?
Nice try, Clough.
It actually does. It goes from like green. So it's actually green right now. Oh, there you go.
I see green. The green at the base. I thought you meant the stuff coming out.
No. Oh, okay. Yeah, it sort of goes from green and then into sort of yellow. Oh, and
I see it. Cool. So the whole time I'm like, dude, that guy has, you're going to wreck your camera.
The hottest coffee. It's cool. It's cool. It's sexy. Yeah. He has the hottest coffee ever.
I'm like, that's wild. Your coffee's been hot the whole time we've been talking and still steaming.
You know who needs this?
Who needs that?
Chan Pav.
Oh,
they need this on the drive, their whole drive Friday morning coffee chat kind of thing, just to have it like, yo, got my coffee here. Look at steaming.
Love it.
And then they lift up the mug. Yeah, they just lift the mug in. They're like, oh, it'd be a good marketing tool.
Are you going to tell them or am I going to tell them?
I don't know.
Maybe nobody tells them.
Yeah, nobody tells them. Someone tell them. We'll leave it out there. We'll do this like the snail mail of the digital world. It'll get around to them eventually.
That's cool.
I wanted to put something in your brain, and I'm curious what it's going to do to your face as soon as I tell you this.
Uh-oh. Yo, I'll make it easy.
Put your face up while I tell you this. Don't put your own face up as I explain this so that
I didn't want people to see my face. Oh, so I'm like, Clough's going to talk and nobody's going to ever know. What so my reaction is. Okay,
here, go for here's it. The thing that's kind of occurred to me in the so part of the on-ramp, we were talking a little bit about students moving between digital and virtual, you know, and what that transition point would look like. My board is saying, at least, you know, for the secondary students, you're there until the end of the semester. This was the choice. But I think we both are starting to see, I'll admit it, I've seen that I'm already starting to hear the murmurings of, I don't want to be in the in-school. I don't like this. I'm actually not comfortable with it. And then there's the other side of, it's almost the exact same thing. I don't like this virtual version. I can't do it. Elementary style, I think the onus of responsibility shifts just a little bit. Parents are like, I forgot how much I didn't want to teach all day and do my job from home. So there's a conversation that's kind of coming. There's a conversation that's coming as far as how do we avoid having people jumping between offerings? And, you know, boards can have all the rules they want about it to say no, but boards are sort of more in the business of compliance, obviously with their own protocols and rules and the laws of education, but they tend to also really try to help and get parents and kids what they need for success. So it's that kind of weird, it's kind of that, there's a little bit of a weird, no, it ain't gonna happen. But as soon as enough of those requests happen, then you know someone just beyond the hand is thinking, maybe we need to develop a protocol for this. Because you want to get ahead of the conversation. You want to make sure that you have something more than just saying, no, your kid can't transfer between the two. I've actually, one of the things I've heard is that if students are, so one of the things that happens at secondary that might not happen. Probably, it happens at secondary. Who knows if it happens at elementary. So if let's say you're taking, let's say your period one class right now is art, and art is not going well, and you go to and you talk to guidance and you say, okay, art's not going well. It wasn't a good choice. I don't feel like it's for me right now. My parents would like me to switch classes. So can I know that there's some open space in a drama class in period one. I'd like to change. I'd like to transfer to that instead. And this is what will be starting to happen likely next week when the grade 10s and 11s and 12s come in, because Thursday and Friday was just about the grade 9s in our board. And for the most part, I would say 9s are more compliant with their schedules. They'll sort of, you know, they're learning how to be at high school and they're figuring out a whole lot of things. I could be completely wrong from my observation. Course changes don't happen as readily with 9s as they do with 10s, 11s, and 12s. Big generalization, just my observation. So then the question is, well, if they do approve a transfer between courses, I've heard that there's actually a quarantine period. So our model is a 4-period model. Okay, so a 4-period day. Our school is a 4-period day. So the way that it works is for the first 10 days, the courses are 1, 2, 3, 4. So that's just the order, like your course one is in period one, course two, period two, three, and four. When we get to the next 10-day cycle approximately, course one and two flip. So you go 2, 1, 3, 4. And then you do that for 10 days. Now, while you're in class, you're only doing in-class courses. You're only doing in-class courses for period one. Your period two, period three, and period four are all virtual. So you go home and you do it. And period one is like a 200-minute block. Like it's a long block. So in a 4-week rotation set, in a full semester rotation set, we have 4 different versions, basically. You do them twice. Don't even know if that makes sense, what I just said to you. However, what it brings into question is that we're also doing A-B cohort flipping. So there's a lot of complexity to someone just saying, I want to jump into a different course, which in the past would have just been okay if there's space and it's a reasonable change. Okay, we're gonna try and make that happen for you. And one of the things I've heard is that, I can't substantiate this, but it was just in bits and pieces and conversations with different people that have better access to system information than me, is that there's a quarantine time. So you would actually not be able to be in school for X number of days if you're going to be joining another cohort. And it was a fascinating, there's so much complexity that's popping out of trying to make school work in this new version. And that was something that I hadn't even considered kids would actually have easy access to course changes, to be honest. I thought that would be so far down the road just in trying to make that work. But it's funny, it kind of makes sense that there would have to be some quarantine. Because if you're in cohort A and all of your interactions are with cohort A, but you're, by jumping into that course, you might be jumping into a cohort B. It's almost like a parallel version of it, but you're still in the drama course, but in order to access it, you're jumping into cohort B, or it changes the cohort in the class somehow by you jumping in the alpha, and it sort of moves people potentially. So it's because the whole idea of trying to keep, you know, under 16 people or under 15 people, whatever it is. So there's some kind of fascinating complexities popping out, at least at secondary. And I don't know how they're going to work that.
So did I give you the facial reaction you were looking for?
No, because that's like only part one. Here's the part two to it. As we're talking about, you sort of move from one conversation to another with different staff. And everyone wants to kind of double down on the, well, did you think about this? So this is kind of, at least in my secondary experience, everyone has another sort of consideration because someone was just like, oh my gosh, that seems so complex. One of the conversations I was in was somebody saying, well, you know, we just have to kind of hold on because as soon as stuff gets better, you know, it will be able to go back to classroom stuff which is, I guess, a possibility. But what I've really started to kind of work through in my mind is I don't think this system is going to disappear even if we get back to wellness. And what I mean by that is, let's say we get back to open offer to be back in the schools again, like pre-March 13th. A lot of school boards are putting massive amounts of kind of resources towards developing a virtual platform. And these are major, in some moves, it seems, major infrastructure kind of shifts and major kind of policy shifts and people shifts. I'm going to throw down a little bit on some, you know, future school here. And I'm calling it, I'm betting this, we're going to have a dual system coming out of this. I'm betting that my bet is that, and this would, let's say, predicate, I'm basing this on the fact of if we no longer have to have COVID protocols. If we have to have COVID protocols, we're going to be doing something similar or an iteration of it. But in the event that we no longer have to have COVID protocols, my bet is that students are going to be given the choice. It's now going to be a choice. Do you want to do your school in class, or do you want to do your school? I'm not sure about elementary. I'm going to call this one for secondary. Do you want to do it in school, or do you want to do it virtually? And I think that the management of it will be downloaded to each school. So this won't be right now, it's managed centrally, but I'm betting that it would be better to have it managed at school level. So what that would look like, potentially what it could look like, is a little bit like what you were explaining previously, in that you're going to have a caseload of kids that could be in class with you. Well, there's two possibilities. They will be on your roster for your class, your period, you know, your English class that you're teaching. There's going to be some students that are right there in the classroom with you. And then there's going to be some students that are participating from home. I think that we're going to come around the bend of, we're going to come around the bend, and I don't mean to a happy place, but I think in mandated tool usage, with in-class surveillance. So it's basically going to be you're live streaming your class. That's my call. In the least, we have a dual system that instead of centrally located, like a virtual high school away from the high school, it's just up to your school to manage your kids. So that means your kids would still be able to connect with your guidance, you know, whether it's virtual meetings or whatever. They could still come in and maybe visit the teacher. I'm betting, because I can't see how this is not at a molecular level, it's changing. It shattered our model of school. You know, it was a conversation I was having with my nines yesterday. I asked them about, so right now my grade, I have two sections of grade nine learning strategies. And because of the way the schedule falls, we're starting with virtual learning strategies. So it's virtual learning strategies and mathematics class together. So we're starting with that. So right now I'm slowly working through, here are the digital tools that we're going to need so that we can get to the learning. In conversations with the kids and doing some soft surveys, I said pre pre-March 13th, so you think about your grade 8 year, what percentage would you say of your learning did you do virtually? So think of all the different courses you were taking and how much of your time were you spending, you know, doing your reading and your writing and your mathematics and your science virtually. I had some kids that were saying 2%. I had some kids that were, you know, saying, you know, 90%, but all of them in very different places. There was not one repeat number within each of the sections. It was almost like I had a dozen kids in each space that each had a different take on what online learning was. And I said to them, I said, this is a huge responsibility for us, because you are officially the first generation that was forced to do virtual school. I said, I know everyone's at virtual school, but even this is, it's forcing you to do digital school. I said, this is a big change. And then we talked, you know, about anxiety. We kind of flow into the learning strats supportive end of it. But I can't imagine, I think there's so much happening in every teacher, every student, every parent's life right now that it's difficult to think of what big picture changes are happening around this. And I think people are focusing on COVID is the trigger for this particular moment, but we're pretty quickly going to shift into forgetting that COVID is the trigger for this, and it's going to fall backwards in what we're actually doing. It's no longer going to be as close to the page, and we're going to start to just develop stuff for virtual. We're just going to start to do this. And whether or not we want to anchor ourselves to the spark point and say, well, as long as COVID is a condition, we're going to keep doing virtual. But I think this might be fundamentally changing the molecular kind of like composition of school. And I don't know if we will actually, I think we it'll be challenging. We won't be able to go back because we're creating a demand. Or it'll be so costly to go back because of the sunk cost, right? So, and the sunk cost of resources, it could be financial, it could be wellness, whatever it is. I also think that there's going to be people that we've created a market for this now. We've officially created a market. The education minister got more than what he could have hoped for, because he was just looking, you know, what did he back off? He backed down to 2 courses virtual. I forget what the number was. Like, this is bonanza time. Look at what he's getting. He's getting a laboratory fully decked out to see what his vision, or, you know, Ford's vision of e-learning would be, virtual learning would be. And I just can't see boards backtracking. The pathway back will be too far, and we've created a market and a craving for it.
So,
and it will change elementary too. Sorry. I think that it'll be an easy, I think the low hanging fruit will be to do the offerings at secondary. It's going to change elementary either by there's some offering, or now you've got something, another thing that you have to prep the kids for. So those kids with me that were saying, yeah, maybe 5% clef, they're going to have to arrive at secondary with a higher percentage. So whether or not you want to have a higher level of digital learning, the conversation is always there. When you get to high school, you're going to have to be able to do this. Like, that's the elementary conversation I've always heard before. Secondary's version is when you get to college or the workplace, right? We're all sort of baiting the hook forward. Mm-hmm. But if high school does keep these models, I think it will, you're going to be changed by that impact. You might not be sort of offering the virtual learn from home, but the elementary is going to have to do different work in order to prep the kids to be good in those spaces. That's what I've been thinking a lot about.
Okay. Well, when you talked about secondary using this model as we go forward, and COVID is just a memory at some point, I don't disagree with you there. And I do agree that the Minister of Education and his people, I mean, this is the way that they wanted to go, right? This is the way that they wanted to move. And I think for them, COVID was a blessing in disguise, or maybe not even in disguise. It's just a blessing because we had to move in this way to continue educating the students. Do I see that it continues? I agree with you that there definitely is a market for it. And for some kids, and this was the argument the whole time, for some kids, it really works. For some kids, it really works. And for
other teachers kids, and there are and instructors, right? Yeah. Right. There's some people that are just like, they really do dig it. They see themselves as this, and they see their curriculum accessible through this. And they see the relationship with the kid teacher as successful. I do see that too.
So I agree with you that for some educators and for some students, this is great. That was never the issue, right? The issue was what they really want to do, which is dismantle public education and privatize things and take some of the courses that some of you amazing teachers are using and then selling them to other people. So, you know, they're playing dirty. That's the issue we have, is their dirty play. But I agree, there's definitely, like, it's pretty cool to think. Now, I know my oldest, I don't see any of this being positive for him. And that may change once we get deeper into his grade 9 year.
And he starts Monday.
He's starting virtually. He's not starting, his cohort's starting virtually, not face-to-face.
So all of his courses, like every single course is virtual.
His first 3 days of school are going to be virtual.
Okay.
So they do like, I don't even want to explain how my school board's doing it, but his school starts Monday and he doesn't go to school to do any face-to-face till Thursday.
Mm.
And then he goes Thursday, Friday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I think. And then he goes back to being at home virtual for 4 or 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that's going to work for him because of his learning style and his learning profile. I don't believe. So my wife, it's added stress for my wife and I because it's almost like we're going to go to school and work all day. Then we're going to come home and do high school all night. We're not excited about that. I don't think he's excited about that. Because for him, it's going to be doing it twice, right? Basically doing it and then us reviewing to see if he did what he was supposed to do. So from that perspective, it kind of sucks. But there is some benefit in that. Let's say this were to continue, which I suspect it would, just because, like you said, there's a market for it. If, you know, my son wants to take a course in grade 12 and it's not being offered face to face, but we're told, hey, it's going to be offered virtually.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you could consider it. Then it's like, well, you know, how badly does my kid need it or want it? And then, yeah, let's move forward. Like, so it's kind of cool that there are some options that way. It's like when I went to high school, there was night school. And so kids who had conflicts during the day would just sign up for the course they wanted at night. And they would go to school for a semester twice a week for, you know, 3 to 4 hours a night. And they would do night school. And they would get whatever credits they needed there. So I get it. I don't think it's a bad thing. The part that I don't like is the dirty play that comes with it from our government, but I do think that there's benefits to it for sure. And I do think that for some people, I don't think it's going to go away. I agree with you. I don't think it's going to go away. And even before all this, there were online classes. You could do a class virtually. And I know my school board would use Brightspace, and that would be the place where the classroom would be and where the learning would happen. So it's not like it's never happened. It's happening. So I guess, I mean, your attempt to shock me or to maybe see a look of shock on my face or disappointment, I just don't think it's there. I think you're right. I think I've heard about teachers teaching that way already for the past couple of years in my board.
Mm-hmm.
Not a surprise. I just think it doesn't work for my kids. So we try not, in my house, we're not interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what does that look like in elementary? That's kind of scary in elementary, because I know in secondary, the people who are teaching online, it's built into their schedule. So if a teacher has their three courses for the term, two of them will be face-to-face and one of them will be virtual. So they still have their three courses, but they're not running a third class in class and out of class.
Mm-hmm.
The difficulty becomes in elementary is that they may want us to do both. And that's a problem. In my opinion, that's a problem, because we're generalists and we're teaching everything, and things happen in elementary school that are, you know how they say teachers need to be flexible?
Mm.
In my opinion, elementary teachers have to be really flexible.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Things shift all the time, right? Like yesterday we had a virtual assembly at our school, our first virtual assembly. Hmm. But it was during my planning time. So when my kids were in class with the planning time teacher, they were experiencing this virtual assembly. I was in a room across the hall on a computer doing my emergency supply plans that were due yesterday to the office. I wasn't watching the virtual assembly. But then, you know, at last recess, my principal called me and he said, "Hey, what did you think of the video in the virtual assembly?" And I said, "I didn't watch it." And he's like, "Oh yeah, you were in your planning time," because he had come up and he had seen me in the room working.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I can't be in both places at the same time. I can't do my stuff during my prep time and be paying attention to the virtual assembly. And yet here we are where my principal's saying, "Hey, did you catch that?" Because he had questions about the video and about things we could do with it so he could share it out with the greater community.
Mm-hmm.
So it was almost like, it was just one of those moments where I'm like, okay, I was lucky. Yesterday was my double planning time. So I said, "I've got planning time again after recess, so I'll check it out and I'll answer your question." But it was like, just not that he was adding more work, but I just got whacked with more work, and it wasn't something that my principal was going to wait 2 weeks for.
Right.
You know, he could have waited like the night or whatever, but I'm like, well, I kind of grabbed it and I'm like, hey, for the 10 minutes of my 40 minutes when I decide to procrastinate, this is what I'm going to do. So I've already got my procrastination time built in. And right after I got off the phone, I did a couple of things that were on my mind that I needed to do. And then I shifted into looking at what he asked me about, responded to him, and then kept doing stuff that I had to do. So for me to find out, okay, you've got 20 kids sitting in front of you every day, all day, and you've got six at home who are going to be learning, you're going to be their teacher, and you're going to be supplying information and activities through D2L or Google, whatever, then I have 26 kids in my classroom. I don't have 20. And I'm like, 26 kids. So there are some aspects, like, how do I do a balanced literacy assessment with them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when do I sit down with them and look at their writing? Like, am I expected to do that at night? So I do my work for the day at work, and then I come home, and then am I expected to be working at night or on the weekends? And I know we already do, but when I work, like when I do my work this weekend for my class, I'm doing it for the 18 kids sitting in front of me, and mm-hmm. there are things that need to get done, but I'm not going on my computer and virtually meeting with any of them this weekend to talk about their writing. So, I mean, some great questions come up around, and here's the other thing too. So at what point is there a line that's drawn? And I wanted to talk to you about this, actually. So this is a great segue. because you know that I'm a classroom teacher who's mm-hmm. interested in becoming an administrator.
Mm-hmm.
But because I'm a classroom teacher, I'm not always thinking like an administrator because that's not my job. Now, when I say it like that, some people might take that to mean that I'm always thinking with my teacher hat on. That's not true. I do like to think with a principal hat on because I'm interested in doing that job one day. So it's kind of cool to like to look at it from that perspective and see the benefit. And sometimes my teacher perspective shifts because I see what they talk about, the greater good for like all the kids in the building. I see it and then I pull back on my thinking or my feelings that come into play as a teacher, mm-hmm. thinking about myself and my kids in front of me, okay? But sometimes I'm like, no, there's a line here. I'm a classroom teacher. That is my role. I'm not an administrator. And sometimes I have questions for my administrators, and I think that they're not going to like my questions because it adds on to their workload. But then I think, well, you know, for all the times that I don't pose the question or that I do something on my own to answer my own questions or make my life work with my kids, sometimes I need to ask the questions. So it is my perspective that a question I asked my vice principal caused a little bit of conflict. And what I mean by conflict is that she was trying to explain to me her perspective around my question, and I was responding as a teacher. And I was like, you have to look at it. I get your perspective. Do you get my perspective?
Mm-hmm.
All I needed was, I understand your perspective, and I'm sorry. If you need something to change, this is the process that may lead to change, but this is what's happening right now. And I was like, cool. Okay. Did I like her answer? No. Did I move on and stop whining or whatever? Yes. I moved on with the response I got. I moved on. I understood the process that may have to take place to make some changes. And I decided I was not going to engage with that process. So for me, it was, okay, I asked the question. I understand my vice principal's perspective and why things occurred the way that they did from where she's sitting. I understand. I don't have to like it. And I think I made it clear that I didn't like it. But, you know, I'm a teacher. I belong to an association. I pay them dues to take care of things that I can't take care of. And I think that this business of having kids in the room and kids out of the room, I don't know, you know, there are smarter people than me who could probably consider how that would work. So I'm not telling you, no, it's not going to happen, or no, nobody would ever allow it. I'm just saying I can't see how some of the things I do in the room that I need done when I'm with the kids, when those things are supposed to happen with kids who aren't in the room, who are at home, that are important for me to help program for them. And then I say, if there was no union, then would people just keep giving us more and more and more and more work to do? With the understanding that it's good for kids, right? Because that's the lens. This is good for kids, so we want you to do it. And my response would be, okay, it's good for kids, but you're about to lose a teacher because you're going to like run me into the ground. And I'm sure you'll find someone else. 100% you'll find someone else. But do you really want to do that? There has to be lines and limits drawn. Admin draws lines all the time. So why can't I draw my line? I know where my principles stand. I think it's fair that they know where I stand. And that is just like, that's just a fact. It's not meant to cause conflict. It's not meant to cause, to break relationship. It's meant to know. So I know where my vice principal stands on this particular issue that I was talking to her about. And she heard my perspective. And I've decided as like a responsible and mature professional, I made my decision and I've decided to move on. The only reason I'm talking about it here is because I've reflected on it, I've broken it down. I'm not here to complain. I'm not here to wish something was different. You know, it's like, it's funny because when I was talking to some of my colleagues about the situation, they keep coming to me and asking me what I'm going to do. And I've said, oh, I made my decision. I'm just going to move forward with how things are. Mm-hmm. And they're like, but it's not right. I'm like, that stuff is for you to consider on your time. You want to mull it over about what's right and wrong, you go nuts. I talked to the person that I was supposed to talk to. Yep. I made my thinking known. I made my feelings known. And I understand their position. And I've decided to do what I need to do for me to move forward. But it's funny how people keep circling. They circle the wagons, eh? Mm-hmm. Like, so what's going on with that? Because they're looking for, maybe they're looking for the conflict, or they're looking for how did you solve this? And it was easy to solve. I'm just going to live with how it is, and I will get used to how it is, and I will adapt. That doesn't mean that I just keep my mouth shut every time a decision's made. Mm-hmm. No, that's not cool. Sometimes you need to have that conversation. So I think I had, what I think I had was one of those difficult conversations, except as I've talked to you about before, there's always a power imbalance. There's mm-hmm. always a power imbalance. So at the end of the day, the people with more power get the final say. Even if they don't get the final say, they get the final say.
Yeah. And I think when, you know, even in the, I think people often assume that the difficult conversations are difficult for, you know, if we take a three stager here, the start, the middle, and the end, I think that many times people focus on the first two phases of that. They don't often think that the conversation is difficult because of where it ends, and it can end in ambiguity. Like that is an end. It's a whole lot of space in the abstract, but that's the end. And if you choose to say, okay, this is the door that I'm going to take out of the ambiguity, which is I'm going to live with it. I would agree. Definitely an example of a difficult conversation from beginning to end. You know, from the courageous, vulnerable start to the sort of like, now you're in the room kind of dealing exactly with whatever it could be. And still at the end, no guarantee that you're able to negotiate any better outcome. And I think, you know, I'm starting to do a little bit of observation of the leaders at the new school that I'm at. And that's what I'm watching. I'm watching to see how they create thread through the abstract that's noticeable. And I've said to a couple people, now it feels like I was talking with one of my new colleagues who's also a cert, and she was saying she just doesn't, we were talking about, I think it was about sort of helping students to get, because the school had some SIA equipment, so the laptops that were stored over the summer. And the conversation was just about what's the best way to get these back into kids' hands? Like that's a general startup question, right? Like, how do we hand these back out? And in the past, it would have been as straightforward as calling them down, handing it. They'd have a form they take home. They have it signed, you know, responsibility form. We're not in that space anymore. And my colleague said, you know, as we're kind of playing through a couple different scenarios, we just started to talk about the stress and anxiety of, that's kind of like you can feel it gathering in waves around a fairly simple conversation, but you could just feel like there's something, it was being made bigger, but just because of the emotionality. And she had said, you know, I'm so afraid of making a mistake. I don't want to make a mistake. And I don't want to do the wrong thing. Now this is just startup. This is COVID rules. This is dealing with grade nines. Like there's a whole lot of things that could trigger that sense of not wanting to make a mistake, professionalism, pride. And then we started talking more, and we kind of landed on, we need to kind of make these to not do anything and to try and play it safe. I'm not saying we trip COVID, but maybe just we need to sort of make these mistakes. Like we need to sort of just say, well, let's put together something and just try it. Let's look at the best information possible. We're going to try it. We're going to try and pull from the abstract and make a concrete checklist and just kind of, we're going to move through it. And this isn't sort of begging for forgiveness anywhere. It's, I think, dealing with stasis and the power of inertia, because I'm feeling like so much of my day right now is that I'm just kind of being locked in one spot. And it's funny because my defense mechanism about that is to get up and actually, so right now my classroom is my virtual, I'm calling it my studio space. So my studio for the virtual course that I'm teaching is in a conference room in the library. So I'm fairly isolated. There's a library tech that's doing work. There's other teachers that are in there, but I kind of really have my own space off the beaten path. So I will be getting, you know, the emails are kind of going ding, 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 ding. And then I will do one of two things. I will either, I'll answer emails, obviously, because we're trying to keep some of that spacing going on. But then sometimes I'll take a walk too. And just to see if I will sort of see someone that I need to talk to in the hallway, and I'll carry some little post-it notes with me saying, okay, this is your running tally, or I use Google Keep. Here's your conversations you need to have. Because my defense to that isolation, my defense to being held just in one space, that defense against feeling like I'm going to make a mistake is to get up and move. And had an interesting moment yesterday where, and this is as a result of my, let's say, my isolation, each day, the last few days, I've been going out to the front of the school, and there's just a, I don't know, there's a tree, there's a grassy patch and a rail. So I'm standing on the grassy patch under the tree, leaning on the rail, just kind of collecting thoughts, breeze, sun, external environment. And yesterday, my principal was coming through rounds, and the principal stopped in and said, hey, I saw you standing out there. Is everything okay? And I said, yeah, that's just part of my process. That's how I kind of correct my brain. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate that. And the principal acknowledged, like, you're kind of off in this little studio space. So just want to make sure I'm checking in. So I found that was, again, a really good way to take the abstract and make it, you know, something concrete out of it, checking in. But it's fascinating, the whole people are constantly watching for other people's templates right now. So, you know, to the people that were checking in with you on that, wanting there to be something more, maybe because they're thinking if that happened to them, maybe it could be concern for you. I don't know. But I'm really getting the overwhelming sense right now, that inertia, like just to feel like, you know, feel like you just can't move from the spot that you're in for the fear of making the mistake, is a very challenging mindset. Very challenging mindset right now.
I think of two things based on what you've said. The first one is that they want to know what the outcome is, because mm-hmm. it's like a template. They can then go and say, hey, I've got this problem, and I know you
did this. It's bringing the abstract back to the checklist, right? Other people's abstract. Yeah,
it's like we had these questions too, or we have these concerns, but now we know mm-hmm. you dealt with it. So we know there's something in place, right? That's the mm-hmm. first one. That's probably the main one. I think some people, they want to look for the negative. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's awesome because I've taken ownership of me and my process.
It must rattle people. Like, that kind of a thing sometimes rattles people too, right?
Actually, you know what? The look on their faces when they ask me how it went, and I'm like, I got my answer and I've decided to stay with how it is. Then they look at me, they're like,
you're not going to fight it?
You're not going to fight it. And it's like, there's nothing to fight. I've made my choice. I own my choice. Well, that sucks. And I'm like, well, that's how I was talking an hour ago. I'm not talking like that anymore. This is my reality now, and I'm going to make my reality the best that I can for me. So you might think it sucks. It's awesome because they want to engage at that level. It's like, I'm done there. I've taken ownership of this situation. I'm done there. But mostly it is to know what was the answer, what they say, which is really cool because I've had this conversation with my mentor. So I'm talking about this as a teacher, but I've also talked to my mentor about what this looks like on the other end, mm-hmm. how you deal with that, because my mentor knows that once you provide a staff member with the protocol, you're going to have to deal with other staff members coming to you, knowing the protocol that you've just established with somebody else, mm-hmm. whether it applies to you or not. So it's really cool. And I'm appreciative of that opportunity, right? Because that's a cool opportunity. But the other thing I wanted to say is about the courageous conversations is that what makes them courageous, in my opinion, is that you're about to deal with something or someone that doesn't agree with you.
Yeah.
And it's hard. It's hard sometimes to express that disagreement in a way that somebody doesn't get their backup or you don't have your backup. So
how do you share your opinion, which you value so highly and personally, knowing that you're not so, and in doing so, you're saying my opinion matters. And at the same time, having that kind of like dual coding of, and I know you're going to disagree with me and not, you're going to disagree with me and maybe assume that I'm asking for something when in fact, what I'm just making sure is that you have my opinion. That's a challenging without being commodifying conversations where there's a clear, where you can say to yourself, by me going into this, I'm going to be a winner. That is what makes it, I think, one of the hearts of the courageous conversation, where you recognize the value of getting what you want is as important as the value of you sharing your opinion. And it doesn't necessarily have to mean that you sharing your opinion, you know, being able to separate your success in acquiring an outcome is a separate step from the value of you sharing your opinion. And getting used to sort of doing that, because it might not sort of necessarily be, it'll be successful because you shared your opinion and you sort of stayed in the conversation and you made sure that you got satisfaction in the conversation. Getting to the other side of the equal sign of getting what you want, though, might not, you might just be setting the groundwork with that person. Well, so okay. they got to get used to how you sort of come at conversations.
Add the power level as well.
Yes.
Right.
And, add the power level. Yeah.
So, I mean, in this regard, the power level, it's great to have a positive relationship with the person that you're about to go and have this conversation with. Mm-hmm. Right? That always helps. So it's just like, it's good stuff for me to reflect on now and not the issues, but the how it plays out, right? So you reflect on how it plays out. And, you know, I'll give my vice principal credit. A few times after our initial conversation, she would, in speaking with me, she would revisit the initial conversation, and that's her prerogative, but I was done with it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so I was done. I was done with it. I'm not angry and I'm not upset. I was disappointed at first because things weren't playing out the way that I thought they might, but like I said, I took ownership of it. I dealt with it and it's gone now. It's finished. So I have no issue. I do enjoy, though, reflecting on the process of it. And then this business of the courageous conversations with people who have more power than you. Yeah. And this is a great lesson for me as a classroom teacher, because I work with little kids. And I made it clear to them yesterday that I'm in charge. And it was a strategic move on my part, in that you give them some rope and then you pull back a bit and you teach them. I'm trying to teach them on how much rope that eventually they get to take. So when I just leave the rope and I'm like, I've trained you, I've taught you, I've tried to inject morality into you. Okay. I've tried to inject morality into you to do the right thing, even though it's not easy. Mm-hmm. What will you now do that the rope is available? And there's always somebody who just takes it all. And I'm like, I'm going to have to pull some of that back because you're making poor choices. But mm-hmm. then the majority of the kids have built a process, a protocol, and they take a bit. And then they take a little bit more and give a little bit back. So it's like really cool, right? So what I'm doing is my kids, they know who's responsible for them, who's in charge. Having said that, I've also spent a lot of time this week showing them that I can be flexible. So here are some of the, here's the framework of how our classroom, I'd like to see it run. And if you can provide me with like other perspectives on how you'd like to see it run, then I'm 100% open to those. You know, so even every day this week, at the end of the day when it was time to put the chairs away, every day, every end of day, we did a different configuration, because the one I wanted to use on the first day, they told me, this doesn't work. This is like, doesn't work. I'm like, okay, what do you want to do? And then the next 2 days we tried different configurations, and I said to them, it's still not working, but doesn't mean that my way has to be the way. I'm open to hearing. I want you to speak. Your voice is valued on most things in this room. And when I say most, the things where it's not is safety. It's safety stuff. Like, and I told you this in the on-ramp, I'm sitting between two kids. One of them is ESL, probably ELD, and is sitting in my grade 3 class. And I'm trying not to cause like undue stress with what she's working on. And then on the other side of me is a student that has demonstrated difficulty with behavior and self-regulation. So I'm sitting between the two of them. They're wearing their masks. I'm wearing my mask, and I'm wearing a face shield because I'm real close to them. I can't hear what they're saying to me. Mm-hmm. And every time I talk, all I hear is me.
Yeah.
And a kid, like, so I'm sitting here, kid on my right, kid on my left, and we are like this far away from each other. Like, let's say 45 centimeters, okay? And I'm trying to honor both of these learners, and I'm trying not to lose my mind with the situation I'm in. And I look up, and there's a kid in front of me. And I'm like, you can't leave your desk. And the look on her face was, are you kidding me? And I'm like, you can't leave your desk. I can't have everybody in the room up and walking around. That's old school. This is new school.
That's old school.
That's old school.
That's so March 12th. Yeah. That's so March 12th.
You need to sit at your desk and you need to read the room. Like you have to read the – and I know you're in grade 3. It's the first week of school. But this is a great teachable moment because I've just stopped the whole class and they're all looking at me. And I stood up because I had to take the thing off. I couldn't project my voice into my head anymore. So I'm standing, take the shield off, and I'm like, listen, kids, you can't be getting up and walking around the room. Where I'm trying to eliminate that. That was the way we used to do things. And that's what I would have told you to do. I would have told you to go to your neighbors and talk to them first to try to figure this out. But I can't have you in their face.
Do you have a phrase for that? Did you ever say three before me?
You know, I would start it and I'd never stick with it. I'm just like, talk to your neighbors.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when you come to me, you're going to let me know who those neighbors were and what they did. But so I do this with my kids and she's looking at me devastated. Like, are you serious? I'm like, yeah, unfortunately I am. So you're next in the queue. I will get to you.
Oh man.
Like that's what it is. I can't be.
The digital language that's making it into the actual classroom, eh?
But here's the beauty.
User 9353-7276. Yeah. You're next in the queue. Minutes. Yeah. And then you can just sort of hit the button on the box beside you that goes do 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 do.
So I tell the kids, I'm like, I have a heart. So this is what we're gonna do. And this now you gotta understand the anxiety within me.
Mm-hmm.
I can't avoid giving the students independent work.
Yeah.
And leaving them alone. Like, I can't avoid that yet. There will be some things that will be more autopilot type activities where they will engage with the activity and kickstart it on their own.
Yeah.
And then use me as a support. But right now, they don't have any of that, right? So I can't let the anxiety of what just happened to me take over and me never give them any independent work. I can't do that. So I'm thinking about that. I'm thinking about this poor kid. And I'm telling the class, listen, I have a heart. And then now they're looking at me. I'm like, so this is what's going to happen. You got to work with me and you got to do the best you can so I can do the best I can. And you will be rewarded. Like, basically, there's no other way around it. You will have some time to do an activity that you prefer to do at your desk in your space for a certain amount of time, because I'm going to show you that when you do things to help me, I will do things to help you.
Mm-hmm.
And the really cool thing, and I thank my school board for this, is one of the things that they put in the the primary kit is Play-Doh. And the kids love Play-Doh. So they're like, can we have Play-Doh time? I'm like, 100% I can give you Play-Doh time, which is awesome because my EA is like, they don't know that they're going to be doing math with that Play-Doh and they're going to be making.
Yeah, I do the same.
It's hilarious, yeah. Right? So the kids are using their Play-Doh at the, so at the end of the day, I gave them 15 minutes. They were gassed. They were so done. I'm like, okay, here's your Play-Doh time. Like I promised you, let's start with creating like our favorite animal. And nobody's fighting back. Nobody's like, I don't want to do that. They're like, okay. So they're enjoying their time with the Play-Doh, but they're also like following requests by me to continue to think around things that we would do in school, you know, like, so it was good, but these are the moments that I've had this week. And I suspect I'm going to continue to have this week. So for you to tell me, if we roll back a little bit, I want my kids to know that there's some negotiation, but there are some things that are not going to happen. And that's just the way it is. And I'm in charge. Sorry. That's where I need compliance, right?
Yep.
Just like my principals need compliance from me for certain things, I need compliance from my students for certain things. And you roll back the tape to, then you come into my room and you tell me, by the way, you've got six kids who are at home all day and you're going to need to keep them learning all day. Mm-hmm. So at that point, that's where I kind of will look at whoever tells me that. And then proceed to put the hand up and walk away from them because I have nothing positive to say. And I have no resources to lean on to move in that direction yet.
This is the difficult big picture conversation, the courageous big picture conversation, especially now when everyone is having the feeling of just maybe landing in the first few days of school. I'm not okay. So I've never been the type that kind of would say, thanks for telling me that you've just ruined my day. Like somehow I have no agency to work myself out of that statement. I'm not the type to sort of hold that grudge because I get bad news and somehow blame the bad news for the rest of my bad day. That's not how my kind of mind works. So my mind, if I'm presented with something that that bugs me, I go into me thinking about where that information is kind of landing in my brain and why I'm bugged. I don't often that still hold the person that shared it with me somehow in contempt or the system that sort of did it to me in contempt. I focus on myself. Why is it that this bothers me? What parts of it do I need to work through before I can even say that I'm bothered from it? So I try and work through the emotional state. I try and work through my thinking and realize on the other side that I'm entirely, remind myself that I am entirely in charge of my emotional state, that I need to sort of accept that I'm responsible for how I react to things. With that being said, this conversation is a triggering conversation in general. Because I've already had two different responses that I just take in, but they're, you know, I'll share them back. One response is, don't talk about this because you never know what will happen. Like, don't talk this into manifestation. So the idea of us having that dual system somewhere down the road, by talking about it, I don't necessarily believe we're bringing it into manifestation, but we definitely have to be aware it's on the horizon. And the other conversation is, don't say things like that because you're really going to upset people. Well, if I default to, you know, kind of my operating system as far as that, if someone is upset, that's their task to take care of. That's their work. If they become upset, and I'm not talking intentionally where you intimidate and you bully and become aggressive. But in the general sense of conversation, I get that just general topics can upset people. But I put that's their responsibility to kind of work that space through. Like they have to work it through why a professional conversation about the future of school is upsetting. And then hopefully we can kind of all come back to the table. I think that one of the biggest conversation that we're not having right now is around what is waiting for us just on the other side of this school year. And I do believe that no insider information on my part. It's just me kind of watching what's being invested and how the conversations that are counter, that are speaking up against the virtual learning right now are taking up a lot of space. But I know that's not everybody that's engaging with virtual learning. There are just as many people that maybe aren't talking and saying like, I kind of like this. I want to keep doing this. How do we do this better? I want to do this better. You only have to look to Twitter in the mental shift that happened after a large proponent, chunk of teachers that went back to school were already, they're talking about how do we do this style of teaching. It was no different than when we had the March 13th shift and everyone was, you know, the frightened, scared, bothered, irritated. And then all of a sudden someone shares, here's a slide deck that I'm using that's fantastic. And all of a sudden you have people that are liking the slide deck and the mindset kind of shifts. I believe something similar is going to happen as we sort of get through September, not complacency and not ignoring the fact that COVID and pandemic is still happening, but it's a little bit more of a resilient response to this difficult situation that we're in, as in we are going to do our job and we're going to do our job well. And in doing that, I think we also, part of our job is to discuss what will happen post-COVID and to look it directly in the face. Because one of the things is what you're talking about, having those six kids necessarily at home, you will teach them. And right now, us sitting here right now, and you know, for you to say, you know, for any teacher to say, I would never be able to do that is completely unfounded. Because there will be a way that this will happen in the exact same way March 13th turned every teacher in Ontario to a virtual teacher. In the same way, September 8th turned every student partially into a virtual student. It will happen. We can't sort of like unring that sort of mindset, but I really do believe what we can do is start letting this moment remind us of what's actually in our control and not in our control. And one of the things I feel like that I would love to be able to have more conversations about is what do we want to have when we come out on the other side of this? Or we don't come out on the other side, but we still want to change things up. Because I feel in a lot of ways, the whole standard between the bells education system no longer exists. Like officially, it no longer exists. A lot of people were asking for the shakeup and that kind of stuff, but I think it officially does not exist anymore.
We were forced to shake it up, right? Like the world forced us to change how we do education. And in some ways it's great and in some ways it's not great, right? It's like the change that happens, you always want change to happen on your terms, but that's
not that ambiguity. That's the difficult, change I was taught, that's it, it's a really like good example of the ambiguity. Like even ambiguity, we want it to happen like on our terms. We want the randomness to occur within a framework that's manageable for us. But really, that's why we call it ambiguity.
It's like, well, I'll tell you a secret that nobody's going to hear except for you, Chris. For me, I've discovered that what gets me through any major change is when support is provided. Mm-hmm. And even if I don't use the support, the fact that it's there is brings me like peace that I know that if I need to lean on something, there's something to lean on. And I found that I've seen that throughout my career as a teacher, that when change comes and you give me nothing to make the change or to start moving in a particular direction, it causes me grief. But when you tell me there's support in place, or that you will show me how to do what it is that you want me to do, because a lot of time I say to people, can someone show me? Like when you tell me this is what this looks like, this is what this looks like, what can you show me? And And what's really awesome is when the person showing me can also provide me with not evidence or proof, but like a baseline that they have experienced this, like I'm about to experience it, right? So I remember years ago when I got my own primary class from grade 2, or maybe a 2-3, and somebody said to me, okay, well, now you're a classroom teacher, so you need to do the balanced literacy assessment measures that we have for grade 1 to 3. I was like, I have no idea how to do them. And they were like, well, talk to the literacy teacher. And we had a teacher that was assigned to our school to assist us and to do all kinds of like really awesome intervention work with students to help them learn to read and to help them improve their reading. And I went to her and I said, listen, like, I have no clue what to do. And she said, let's carve out some time after school and I will show you exactly what to do. So she did that. And as she was showing me, it was amazing. The learning was great. And then I said to her at one point, okay, you taught me how to use these tools. Now, how do I do this when I've got a class of 20, 22, like 7 and 8 year olds, I don't know what to do. Like, how do I do it? And she said, and I said to her, and I wasn't being a jerk because we had a relationship, but I said to her, you know, I would really love it if you came in next week and you showed me. And she's like, right on. I'm going to come in at this time and I will show you. So she came in and she modeled for me. She did the whole group instruction and she said, I'm going to go and do this with this group and you're going to do this. And she showed them how to do it and you're going to do that. And she's like, you are all going to function this way while I'm at the back with your teacher showing him how to do what it is that he needs to do. And I had this huge amount of respect for this person after that. Because she would just say, do it like this. And she walked away to her next teacher. I was like, you know what? I need to see what it looks like in the trenches. I need to see how you manage. You know my class. I've got 3 students who can't self-regulate over here. Mm. And I've got 4 IEPs over here. I've got 2 ELLs back here. And I've got like 6 different reading groups. And you tell me this is what is expected of me. I have no idea how to put that into action. And she came and she showed me how to put it into action. She said, it's not going to be perfect, but you're going to start off like this. And then your kids are just going to learn the routines. They're going to figure out the framework. And you just, if you build it in and you give it an honest effort, then they'll figure it out just like you will. And that's one of the reasons why I hate September, because you need to build those routines. And I'm now trying to build like learning routines and safety routines.
Yeah.
It's that added bit. Anyway, I really appreciate getting to talk to you. It felt like when I woke up this morning to do the podcast with you, I felt like I hadn't spoken to you in such a long time because I think.
We had barely any. Normally we're kind of bouncing a couple things back and forth. I was not as engaged in socials this week and just not, I was just kind of making it home and connecting with the fam. And then all of a sudden I went back to my routine of like getting up at 5:30. So I'm like crashing at 9. So it was purpose. The not connecting, I would say, was directly connected with my work week and shifting back into work mind, I guess. So, but I did miss chatting with you throughout the week.
Dude, it was the same with me. It was like I was in bed 9:30. Yep. And then I wake up like really early, do my routines. And then the minute I walk into that building, it's just a magnet for like your brain is divided into like 100 different places. And you just hold on until you get to the end of the day. And then, like you said, you go home, check in with the family. And then do whatever you need to survive for the next day, because you're learning each day what you need for the next day. And then back in the sack really early. And then I tell you, the minute I walk in that building, like my wife's texting me, you know, at her breaks. And I'm like, I see the text. I'm like, I can't get to it right now.
Yeah.
I'm in the middle of whatever. And then when the downtime comes, when the kids are eating lunch or the kids are outside, it's like, okay, I better pick up my list of 8,000 things I need to do. And I better respond to my wife, because whatever she messaged me for, you know, and then check in with the kids because my boys were home. It's like, are they okay? And like, are they eating the lunch that I made for them? Are they okay? Like, and then the minute the bell rings, the kids come in, it's like all that stuff goes away. And then it's focus on the kids. It's like, it was just a wild week.
Yep. Yep. I was right there in a parallel universe with you, dude. Right,
so
there.
That's the type, the code word for today's wild.
Oh, okay.
And I think the title is going to be, it was a wild week.
It was a wild week.
Oh, I like the pick. What does it say? I'm healthy, but I am not okay. You know what's interesting about your mask? By the end of the week, a lot of those masks were broken.
Some, I saw them in the parking lot. Yeah. They're everywhere. It's the new, that's going to be the new exercise cigarette for butts? Fall.
Oh
yeah. It is the new cigarette butt, and you're going to have people, honey, I'm going out to rake up the masks. Let's all dive in the masks. Yay. Gross. Crazy, yeah. They're everywhere. Yep. That and vape cartridges.
Oh, I'm not familiar with those because I work in an elementary school. I don't know anything about those.
Yeah, vape cartridges and masks. So not as many cigarette butts, but in that same, it's that same genre of who's gonna notice? I'm just gonna throw it on the ground, right?
Right. Yeah. And I see them when I'm out and about, I see them everywhere. It's horrible. On that note.
Okay, on that up note.
You do something fun this weekend with your family.
I am. I'm going to, for sure. It's funny. The lawn needs to be done here, too, so that's what I'm going to shift into. My kids have all their own chores. Sorry. We often call them, there's personal chores, mm-hmm. like individual chores, and then there's family chores. And the truth of it is that family chores are redistributable. So my kids, for example, like the cat, cleaning up the cat, that's a family chore, and they're assigned to doing the food bowl and the litter. Right? Emptying the dishwasher, that's a family chore. So that's part of their family chore. But they also, we were talking before, they have to clean their own bathroom and they have to clean their rooms, organize their rooms. Like, if I just kind of put some, if I can't walk from the door to your bed to say goodnight without destroying some Lego village or a painting you've been working on, then you need to do some reorganizing. So
sounds good. I get it.
Dad life.
Hashtag dad life. Okay.
Yep. Okay, man.
Have a good one.
You as well, man. Look forward to chatting with you soon.
Yes, sir.